WIOX is supported by Rick's Tire Service, family-owned and operated on State Route 30 between Roxbury and Grand Gorge. Tires, mounting, and wheel balancing for cars, trucks, lawn, garden, farm, and construction vehicles. Open Monday through Friday, 8 to 5, Saturday, 8 till noon. More information at 800-LG-TIRES, 800-LG-TIRES. WIOX is supported by the Rec Center, the Catskill Recreation Center in Arkville, with a 25-yard lap pool, a weight-in pool for kids, exercise facilities, an array of personal training and fitness programs. The Catskill Recreation Center, County Route 38 in Arkville, open 7 days a week. More information at 845-586-6250 or catskillrecreationcenter.org. WIOX is supported by the Slighter Agency on Main Street in Margaretville, a neighborhood independent insurance agency educating consumers about the dangers of distracted driving and about coverage options. Open Monday through Friday, 8:30 to 5. More information at 845-586-2641 or slighteragency.com.
Please stand by for a timely message from WIOX Roxbury.
Tis the season for Coco companions and donations. Please consider a year-end tax-deductible donation to support WIOX, our all-volunteer nonprofit community radio station. It's easy to do and at least as important as anything Alan Chartok has asked you to do. Just go to WIOXradio.org and click the donate button. Everyone who makes a sustaining donation of $10 or more will be entered into a drawing for a one-year membership to the Catskill Recreation Center in Arkville. So go to WIOXradio.org right now and make your donation, please. And thank you.
Okay, you are listening to WIOX Community Radio, live and local in the Catskill Mountains at 91.3 FM and everywhere at WIOXradio.org, where it's easy to donate if you like what you hear. You can also get WIOX on any smart device through the FM radio apps. This is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic with Ryan and John. John, how's it going?
Things are good, Ryan. How are you?
All right, John. Yeah. Okay. I don't know. What have you been up to? Cutting trees?
Yep. Been cutting a lot of trees for, it was a USDA-funded project for habitat management.
Yeah, over in Rhinebeck.
Yep, other side of the river from here.
But yeah, it's pretty cool. Just willy-nilly, just cutting trees, or you have like some kind of process?
No, it was quite planned. A lot of planning goes into it. I think it's been about a year and a half since the landowner was first visited by a biologist to when the boots are finally on the ground to make it happen. So a lot of people involved, a lot of planning involved, but we're basically cutting most of the trees, which is kind of counterproductive because we're trying to grow a young forest, trying to grow trees. We're cutting trees to grow trees. We're leaving about 10 to 12 oak trees per acre.
Yep.
And some hickory, but mostly oak. Mostly red oak because the white oak there is in decline. It's just the crowns aren't doing well, but we leave a few of those behind as well. Keep it diverse.
Sure.
And yeah, we're going to be, we cut most of the maple out of there, and now it's hopefully going to regenerate as an oak forest.
Well, John is a slayer out in the forest, Charlie.
Well, very good.
He's like a ninja.
A ninja?
A forest samurai.
Holy smoke, a forest ninja samurai.
Yeah. Okay. So that third voice is Charlie Bloom. He's a veteran arborist. How many years you got now, Charlie?
Way too many.
You don't care to say?
I would say the better part of 34.
All right. Yeah. So Charlie's from Freeport, Long Island?
Freeport, Long Island, Nassau County.
And you moved up to the Catskill Mountains, what, early 2000s?
Yeah. Almost 20 years ago.
Man, that long already.
Yeah. Time flies here in the hills.
And you were an arborist down there first?
I was, yes.
How was that?
Busy. Suburbia. Different world. Totally different world.
Yeah.
Different problems. Different issues.
No kidding.
Yeah. What were the main issues there?
Encroachment from one property to another.
So one person's tree growing over the line?
Yep. That guy's limbs are over my pool. Well, that guy's bushes are over my doghouse. You know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No kidding. So when you're not doing arboriculture, before we get into that, what have you been up to?
Well, Ryan.
Yes?
As you know, I'm a CB radio guy, and I love amateur radio.
Yeah.
So I'm happy to be in front of a microphone right now.
You it's recently took a test, I understand.
Yeah, I did. And I passed with flying colors my technician's license in amateur radio. So I'm a ham operator now.
What exactly is hams? Does it stand for something? What is that?
It does, but I can't remember exactly.
Wasn't that on the test?
No, it's kind of a silly thing. It's an acronym or something involving the guys who invented that form of amateur radio. I don't remember what it is.
No kidding.
Not important, Ryan. Next question, please.
All right. What is your? Well, you probably don't want to say.
What's that?
You got a handle then? If you're a CB guy.
Yeah, my handle is Tree Climber.
Three, two, one. Right.
321 is my CB call numbers.
Yeah.
And the Tree Climber is my my handle. But as an amateur radio guy, ham radio guy, it's KD2RYS.
Wow.
That's FCC given number.
The FCC. Well, the FCC regulates this station, WIOX Roxbury, 91.3 FM as well.
Breaker.
Everything you say is live. And local, Charlie.
Ooh, right on.
So, okay, let's proceed into arboriculture. Actually, though, when I met you, you were doing apple trees like crazy.
Yeah, I was a self-proclaimed apple tree guru. I love apple trees. Yeah. I love apples. I love trees. So it works out.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there wasn't a lot of guys doing it. I work a particular level, all right? I'm not an orchardist, so I don't work commercial orchards. But I do work the private owner, a guy who has a farm, an old farm, wants the old trees reclaimed, a guy that's planting new trees in his backyard. That's the kind of apple tree work I do.
And this is in Sullivan County. They got a ton of apple trees over there.
Everybody, yeah. Everybody yeah. either wants or has apple trees, sure.
About
and
you,
it's
John.
A good thing.
Yeah, I think so. You going to plant some apple trees, John?
Yeah, buying a house. Going to have an apple tree there.
You're
yeah.
going to have more than one. You do realize
yeah,
that.
Yeah, no, I know that. But
yeah.
There's no apple trees on the property. It's kind of weird. Well, there's one at the corner on the property line, so maybe it's the other guys.
It could be. Be careful. Those property lines are tedious.
Sure.
So if you're just tuning in, tonight's topic is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom. So, Charlie, how would you – what got you into arboriculture anyway?
Money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Make some money. I needed a job.
Yeah.
And I hadn't grown up much, so I was still climbing trees. And I found I could get paid to do it. Worked out.
So I went to a workshop last week, 2 weeks ago at Rutgers. And there was a guy about your age. He's 90? Been climbing for 30 years. And he was talking about this story about his father, who owns the business, right? And so the kid, he's 19 at the time, right? And he's like, I just don't feel safe when I'm going up in the tree, just like shimmying my way up into the tree and then tying in and stuff. That's how they used to do it, he said. And his father goes, well, I've never seen anyone let go yet.
Yeah, well, good point. Very good point, yeah.
But, I mean, a lot has changed in arboriculture. Like, I've heard that from guys your age. A lot of them would literally just free climb up into the tree, do whatever it took. It was considered safe. You had 3 points of contact, your hand, a knee, and your foot.
Yeah, 3 points of contact is a lot different nowadays. But
yeah.
Technology has marched forward. We have better materials and better equipment, obviously. Nobody free climbs anymore. If you want to go back to when I started, it was basically a buck strap, a harness, and spikes.
Yeah.
And you spiked just about every tree that you were going to work on, whether you were pruning it or taking it down. You were going to stick spikes in it. Now we know that that's not helpful for trees that you're going to prune or care for. So what we do now is we send a rope up ahead of us and use that rope to ascend the tree. And that's done in many different fashions. But basically, you throw a line up with a sandbag or a weight, and you use that line to pull your climbing line up into the tree, and then you climb that line. It sounds like a process, but it's really not. It's very natural.
And like when you're getting into it, like what were the guys like – that were much older at the time, 30
rough.
Years ago.
Rough, yeah.
Banged up, injured?
Yeah. Yeah, I can tell you right now, even the chainsaws that we used were a lot heavier, bigger, and just the technology wasn't there yet. And I found that some of those guys, they were really good at what they did, and they were very efficient using, you know, the roughest, oldest equipment there is out there. But as time played on, those guys kind of, you know, they went into history, and we've moved forward.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean, was it more about tree removal than pruning or whatever? Or
yeah.
Know?
But
I don't know.
In those days, we had guys that were self-proclaimed tree surgeons.
Yeah.
So if you had a broken limb up in a tree and you wanted it, you know, taken off before it fell off and damaged something, you'd call some guy who had the guts to go climbing up this tree and hoist this limb down to the ground safely without crushing everything below it, you know, whether it was a fence or garden or the house.
Yeah.
And again, those guys have now become what we call certified arborists. So arboriculture was born.
I don't know, like what I guess,
should say the term arboriculture was born.
What were you doing before you decided to strap on some you know, spikes and a chainsaw and climb up a tree? Like
not much. I was a kid, so I was pushing a lawnmower around.
Like, weren't you doing motorcycles and
stuff?
Oh,
yeah. Hobby-wise, yeah.
You kind of have to be a knucklehead to climb up a tree.
Yeah,
saying.
But you got to be a knucklehead to drag race motorcycles.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm leading to here.
On the Jones Beach Causeway, exactly. But yeah. To fund those kinds of crazy ideas, you have to have money, so... I decided that if somebody was going to pay me to do some stunt like climb to the top of a tree, I would go that route, and I did.
And as far as like learning about that, who did you learn from? Or you just kind of do it yourself? Like, how that happened?
No, I worked under several companies in the very early days, and quickly learned that it didn't take a lot to cut a tree. That was a mistake because. In those early days, on my own, I made a lot of mistakes. Nothing life-threatening or you know, I didn't damage anybody's property, but just simple mistakes that didn't lend themselves well to making money. So I went back and I learned. And I learned from good climbers and good companies. There are a lot of great guys out there that have been in the racket a long time and they know what they're doing. But I also turned to an association, the ISA. And the ISA allowed me to become certified as an arborist through education.
Yeah.
And how has that helped you? I mean, you got to take classes every year now, or?
Yeah. If you're going to stick with it, they do ask that you continue your education and stay current. But for me, it was enough to get that certification and then apply it. So applied knowledge has been more important to me. And I've grown with that.
Yeah.
It certainly helped. It's a confidence booster for someone starting out, because going in with some knowledge and being able to kind of talk the talk, it makes a big difference to a customer, because they feel more confident. So a client that's going to hire you, who's confident in you, is certainly going to call you back.
And that's a private thing, right? ISA, International Society of Arboriculture?
I believe so, yeah.
It's not like a licensing thing.
No, not at all, not at all. This is a private deal, and they provided a lot of information that wouldn't necessarily come to a guy who's driving around in a pickup truck with a chainsaw.
Oh, you son of a gun.
Yeah, we hear that term a lot.
Yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that.
Not at all. As a matter of fact, that's how most of us have started.
Yeah. And may even end.
And may end, yes.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. Tonight's topic is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom.
In satin, you don't wear a diamond ring, but I'm satisfied with you. You look just like an angel, but you haven't got wings, but I'm satisfied with you. I'd rather have you just the way that you are than change you for somebody new. Maybe I could do better if I reach for a star, but I'm satisfied with you. Satisfied with you. I just can't see no reason why you bother with me, but I'm satisfied with you. I often wonder if it's all a mistake. It's hard to believe that it's true, but if I'm only dreaming, I sure don't want to wait, 'cause I'm satisfied with you.
If you're just tuning in, this is From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. with Ryan and John. Tonight's topic is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom. He's been an arborist for, what, over 30 years?
Yeah, I'd say the better part of 34 years.
So, Charlie, what do people want from an arborist? Like, you know,
honesty.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah, no, honesty is a big one. They want a guy that can do what he says he can do, and they want a guy who will be honest and say that he can't do something. You know, it's out of his range or scope of ability, and that's a very important thing. A lot of young guys get hurt and property gets damaged when they take on jobs that they're really not either trained or equipped to do.
Yeah.
Do you feel people like, do you think that they just want to be told what the tree needs or wants to do rather than, I guess, do people get upset when you have to tell them, well, that tree definitely has to come down? There's no way around it.
Well, there's so many variables here. When I approach a customer who's asking advice, I listen first. They usually have a good understanding. They've lived with the tree. They know what they want. They know what they want to see, and they know what they want in their treescape for the property, both safety-wise and you know, the integrity of the tree is everything. But they also want it to look nice. They want it to look nice on the property. It's one of those things where you have to walk a fine line. I can tell people that, yes, if you want to save the tree, you'd have to take off half of that tree. Half is dead or dying or diseased or damaged. That tree with half of it gone is going to look ridiculous. So at that point, you have to make a decision. Do we save the tree or do we take it down? And a lot of people would opt at that point, believe it or not, for aesthetic reasons to take it down, as opposed to cutting off half the tree and it looking silly. And it will. A lot of trees, especially when they cut them back from the wires and municipal things like that, the trees look strange. Yeah. But there's the fine line. Then you have other people who are diehard. We'll call them tree huggers. Is that okay to say?
Sure.
That's not a curse word, right?
No.
All right. So tree huggers, they would rather the tree, you know, be alive and just get the care it needs, no matter what it looks like. So it's hard to say. It's hard to pinpoint where people are going to stand. But for the most part, if you listen to a client, they'll tell you what they want. And ultimately, you can suggest the best path to get to where they want to be.
What is how would you define what a healthy tree looks like? I know it's a very subjective kind of thing, but you know.
Well, a healthy tree looks like a tree that has no dead or decaying wood in it. It's a tree that is not interfering with power lines or interfering with the house, because that may not. All right, so that doesn't constitute an actual healthy tree, but is it living a healthy life?
Right, or because, is it hazardous?
Right, because if it's interfering with the roof of your house, that's not healthy for anyone, any party in this. And if it's interfering with the power lines or creating ice issues over a driveway, well, that's not a healthy situation. So at that point, is the tree really healthy? I don't think so. At that point, you have to decide, do you prune it back? Do you thin it out? Do you take it down? Do you redirect it? You have options.
Yeah.
Certainly have options.
Through pruning and stuff.
Sure.
Anything to do with the roots ever? Do you ever do anything like that?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. We've root pruned to avoid sidewalks from being lifted, driveways from being cracked, interference in plumbing and underground utilities, sprinkler systems, underground wires and cables, and foundations, home foundations, building foundations. So sometimes you have to cut the roots back. It's a big deal.
Does that require special equipment or?
Sometimes.
Take a shovel out and dig it open?
You can, yes. Depending on the age of the tree, you know, if it's a really big tree, you're going to get really big roots. Sometimes machine excavation is necessary.
Yeah.
to get to the root or the problem. But all in all, a healthy tree really is a tree that fits your landscape, fits the property, and fits your needs, both for safety and aesthetics.
What's like a common problem, like where you see it over and over again, you wish people just wouldn't do it?
Chain dogs to trees, then leave the chains in the tree.
Yeah. Flagpoles.
Anytime you wrap something around a tree and then forget about it, it's going to girdle or cut into the tree, severing the vascular system of the tree and ultimately killing it. But it's a slow, long, torturous death.
Yeah.
I mean, that tree looks like, you know, bad news for a long time. And then you have a standing dead tree that's usually too brittle to climb and take down. You got to bring in special equipment. So that's always a no-no. Not to mention, I don't like tying dogs up to trees. But with that said, any time you attach something to a tree, whether you bolt on a birdhouse or a bird feeder or a clothesline, those items will get grown into the tree. They will get sucked into the tree as the tree grows. That's not good for the tree. So that's something I'd like to see less of.
Yeah, making big cuts on trees, maybe the wrong species near the house.
Yeah, oh yeah, sure.
One that grows over the roof because, you know, that's where the light is.
Oh yeah, well, poor choices when you're choosing landscape material like trees and shrubs. Poor choices are poor choices. I mean, you can grow something next to your house and it'll look great for 2 years. But then once it grows beyond that, now it's blocking windows, it's growing into the leaders and gutters, it's shading the house so much that you're growing moss on the roof.
Yeah.
There's a million things to look at there as well.
What about white pine, where someone planted it in the 1980s?
I don't like white pine.
You see it all the time, especially in Sullivan County, where people plant white pine just right next to the house. And then 30 years later,
it's the most brittle tree in its adulthood. It breaks under snow load, wind and ice load. It just snaps, and when it comes down with a lot of weight, and does a lot of damage. Yeah, I don't like white pine for that reason. It's pretty. It's a good looking tree in the right vista, but not around the house, as far as I'm concerned. People are going to argue that because a lot of people love their white pine trees. But I'm always the guy they call when there's a problem because they're difficult to deal with.
Yeah, it's kind of like I looked at these white pines over in Swan Lake. You know where it is.
Sure do.
And someone planted them in the early 80s, maybe even 70s. And they're pretty big trees now. Mm. And it's like they're healthy trees, meaning like the foliage looks good, the needles are nice and green, and their form is terrible because they're, you know, they got the weevil when they were young, so they got multi-stems. Someone tried cabling them. They were improperly cabled, going around the stem instead of through.
Oh, you can't do that.
But it's like, that's like a situation. Let's ignore the cabling thing for a second, though.
Okay.
I don't know. Like, I couldn't say that they weren't hazardous because they're right next to the house, and they're 60-foot tall trees. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if...
Right off the bat, that's hazardous. Yeah. I don't care what kind of tree it is. If it's that close to the house and it's above the roof, it's hazardous.
Yeah.
Trees break every day. There's, you know, they're a living thing that's susceptible to all kinds of issues, and they break. And when they break, they come down, and down is over your house. Not good. Not good.
Is there a species of tree that you're like that is maybe better than another to put close to the house that's big?
Let's not put any trees close to the house because that's just not a good idea.
Right.
But if you want a shade tree to maybe give a sunny side of the house some shade, it doesn't have to be planted right on top of the house.
Right.
I mean, a shade tree allowed to grow to its full potential will shade that house even if it's 40 feet, 50 feet away from the house or more. And believe me, a tree planted 50 feet away from the house can still reach the house.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I can't imagine when they plant it right at the foundation, not to mention the roots and foundation do not go hand in hand.
I mean, you can imagine the situation. There was probably, and I lied, they're probably 70 feet tall or 80. So they're planted about 15-foot spacing. planted right next to it, and we're talking a dozen white pines, and all about 20 inches in diameter or more. Huh? I mean, it's just thousands of dollars. Total removals.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, 20, 15 grand or more. I mean, it's just like...
Okay. Now you got to hold that against the damage to the house when that happens, when one of those trees break,
yeah,
or multiple trees break in a big windstorm. 15,000 is nothing. I mean, right, you can't even get a full roof done for 15,000.
True. Right? Yeah, yeah.
John, you're buying a new house, right?
Sure. Not okay. A new house.
You're getting yourself a house that's new to you. What do you got growing on the property close to the house?
Nothing within reach.
Perfect.
What about the shed?
The garage is going to need some removal work immediately.
Okay, I'm in the book.
Now wait a second. Why did you say immediately?
The species of concern is the issue. White ash.
Okay.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
They're leaning. They have direct lean towards the structure. So.
And are they dead now?
No.
They are dying.
That area hasn't gotten borer full blown yet.
Yeah.
Full blown.
They may have, but they may or may not. Okay. Lingering ash borer.
Okay, so
yeah, it's now or never. It's happening. It's going to happen this winter for sure.
So we're talking about the emerald ash borer and the damage it does to the ash trees.
Yeah, they don't have it like we do yet in Ulster and Sullivan.
Okay, but they kill trees. It's a long, slow death.
Yeah.
And the trees are standing dead, and they become very brittle. We've seen that time and time again.
Yeah.
Well, good. At least you know what you're up against.
Yeah, that was one of my criteria.
Okay.
I did not want a house in a forest.
No.
This is a house in a field.
Good. Perfect.
But, you know, that message is not getting out. 'Cause I go to these meetings, these International Society Arboriculture meetings or Tree Care Industry Association, and all arborists talk about, and we're all biased in our own field, but like arborists will just talk about the energy savings of having trees and right next to the house. And I'm always like, listen, I understand all that, but you got to talk. There's cost to having trees right next to the house too,
okay,
but they won't talk about it.
All right. Well, that's because they're in business to cut trees.
Yeah.
Okay. So some people are in it to save trees. I'd like to think that I'm in business really to help the customer, no matter what he or she wants. But there are guys out there in the business, and that's why you have to shop out your local arborist or tree service, because they're fighting to have trees in the worst possible areas.
Yeah.
So they have work, and that's the bottom line. It's the dollar. So, yeah, I need to get paid, but I find plenty of work out there doing tree service jobs that don't require that kind of insult to a homeowner, because I think that's ridiculous.
Yeah.
I think the homeowners need to know the truth, and that is trees should not be planted right against the house.
Yeah, they're not talking about the cost. Whenever someone doesn't talk about either the benefit, only talks about the benefits or only talks about the cost of something, you know?
Yeah, but there's big gray area.
There's cost to
there.
It. Yeah, I mean, there's cost to having trees next to a house.
Sure, absolutely.
You know?
They have to be pruned. There's going to come a time when something has to be cut, and the bigger the tree, the closer to the house, the more dangerous the job, the more precarious the work, the price goes up, the dollar amount goes up for that job.
And if it has to be pruned later in life, now you're making a big wound.
Sure. Oh yeah. Then right? now you're taking the tree's health into a place that may not recover from.
Yeah, I mean, if it's over 4 inches in diameter, that's going right to heartwood. I mean,
right.
You know?
Infiltration of disease and pestilence at that point, and not to mention shock. You know, that kind of pruning wound can induce a lot of shock.
Yeah. Right, John? I don't know.
You listening, John?
I'm learning.
All right, man. you're a new homeowner. You better take notes.
You're just tuning in. You're listening to From the Forest. Tonight's topic is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom. Let's see. We played Hank Williams Sr. Now we'll go with Hank Williams III. We'll skip over Williams Jr.
No junior,
we'll get to him later.
and he ain't got nowhere to turn or nowhere to go. It makes me feel like sometimes I'm out of control. So I'm gonna get wasted with all my country heroes. And I'm drinking some George Jones and a little bit of Coke. Haggard's easing my misery, and Waylon's keeping me from home. Hank's giving me those high tides, Cash is gonna sing it low. And I'm here getting wasted, just like my country hero.
Hank Williams III, man.
Wow.
I like that song.
Where's the fourth?
There's no fourth. I don't think there is a fourth, John.
One the third day. Hasn't had a fourth yet.
I don't think so. So maybe. We'll have to look it up.
It's okay. Can...
But yeah, up next.
How many Hank Williamses do we need? The first and second were great.
That was a good song Hank Williams III did that I liked.
Who wrote it?
I think he did it. I don't know.
Maybe... Junior wrote it.
I like it because when you heard that song we just played, you see the twang in the background.
Like
it almost
twang.
Sounds like he's drunk because he's talking about drinking to
right.
his country
yeah.
heroes.
Yeah.
And it makes you almost feel drunk listening to it. It's,
right.
it's a good song,
okay.
man.
Good.
But I like Junior the
song.
Best.
Of course.
You know?
Either one.
But
Senior's
he sounds
good.
Nothing. Junior is the outcast. He don't sound anything like Third or Senior.
He doesn't have
Third
to.
And Senior sound just alike.
Well, Third has gone back old school.
Yeah,
which I like. I like old school country. I don't like country pop.
Oh, I thought you were a Luke Bryan fan.
All right, I'm leaving.
I thought you. Oh, I thought isn't that a Luke Bryan shirt you have on?
It is, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to turn it inside out. How about that,
Luke Bryan? Listen, he destroyed country, man.
I don't want to talk about that kind of country, man. That's not really country music.
It's bad '90s music.
Yes, it is.
Is it just me or does it sound like 90s music?
It's pop.
I'll give you an example. Darius Rucker was a 90s pop singer.
And now he's still a pop singer.
Who do you...
Just twanging.
That's what I'm saying. He's like, I don't have to change anything.
Right. Yeah. No,
back
I agree.
In the game.
I'm back. All right. Tonight's topic, I'm from the forest, is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom. Charlie, tree inspection. What are the big things you're looking for at first when you prioritize tree inspection?
Okay. Well, again, listen to your client. Listen to the customer. He'll tell you exactly what he's looking at. And then you can go from there. But if someone was to say, hey, I got a couple of oak trees on my property. Would you let me know if they're worth saving? Well, the first thing you look for, because it's going to be obvious, is physical or mechanical damage. Broken limbs, you know, torn bark, somebody ran into it with that pickup truck, that kind of thing. Root damage. Yeah, if somebody's done a new driveway on their property and they cut right across the roots to put this new blacktop driveway in, that's going to be a hazard to that tree. So also...
uplifting roots?
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the path of water. This is something that not everybody realizes, but if you plant a tree in a place that gets wet constantly, as that tree gets bigger and takes over with mechanical advantage and has leverage, it could pull itself right out of a wet environment and topple. We see it a lot on the edge of forests because it's usually pretty wet. A good wind will topple a tree. So planting location is everything. Yeah. How close is it to the house and walkway, that kind of thing. But then we'll look for other insect damage, disease. We just spoke about the emerald ash borer. We know what to look for. Once that's spotted, it's usually too late. Yeah. When you know, when you see evidence of the borer, it usually means that they've been there a long time and they've done their damage, and that tree's going to start to go into mortal decline.
Go ahead, John.
I was going to ask, how often do you see changes to the landscape affecting trees as trees you have to remove? Like, say,
a ton.
Septic, driveway, ditches.
Yeah, a ton.
People don't think about that, I feel like.
Absolutely. Just as I said, like water pathways, people will change the dynamic of a lawn to divert water. And they'll divert that water right toward trees. And I've heard this so many times. Oh, yeah, those trees will suck that water right up and get rid of that water. That's not really how it works. Not only will they suck up that water, and they will, they'll grow a lot faster. And the wood will be softer, and the tree will suck up all this water, get heavier. And with the ground being saturated, they're prime for the wind to come through them and then pull them right over.
Apple trees.
Yeah.
I saw it today on the way to work, a guy who wanted us to prune his trees. And, you know, I don't blame him. It would have cost a fortune because these trees are big.
Yeah.
And I was like, they should have been pruned 30 years ago. Yeah. But in any case, apple trees aren't meant to be that tall.
No.
And one's on the ground.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And it's been wet.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw it last year with one member up on Dry Brook.
Yep.
Was it last year or year before? Anyway.
2 years, yeah.
We were supposed to come the week before. Tree just toppled over. If we had pruned it and shortened it,
yeah,
it would have been fine, but it was in a wet area and it was compromised.
Yeah, absolutely. Wind also, you know, wind plays a big role in that. So a lot of people they'll clear, you know, again talking about changing, you know, the landscape and topography. A lot of people will clear a portion of their wooded lot, leaving something that they may want to keep, but now it's no longer protected from the wind as it was when they're, you know, it was growing in a stand of trees.
Yeah.
So it becomes susceptible to something called wind shear, and wind shear will pull a tree right over. So yeah, anytime you change landscape, you put in walkways or driveways, you add an attachment, you know, an addition to your house, you're digging, you're one of the worst case scenarios is when they move soil and they'll push that soil toward a tree and cover a root zone of a tree with now whether it's, you know, 4 inches, 8 inches, you know, a foot of soil that wasn't there prior. That'll choke a tree right out. That tree will suffocate under those extremes.
What about planting? You see girdling roots sometimes, but, like, what about planting depth and all that? What are mistakes people commonly make when they're planting trees?
They plant too deep.
Yeah.
They think this tree has to be, you know, way down in the ground, and that's just wrong.
Why do you think it happens? I mean, because I think, you know, and they take it out of the pot or whatever, I think we get fooled because those little roots are at the top of the pot, but that's not the depth all the time. You know what I mean?
Right. Some of those are just adventitious growth roots that really aren't going to matter anyway, but it's because they were stored in that pot for too long at the nursery, overwatered. There's a million reasons, but basically on any tree or shrub, at the base of the trunk, there's a portion of that flares out. We call that the root flare, right? That or trunk flare. At that flare, it should be exposed. It shouldn't be underground. You shouldn't see a straight stick coming up out of the ground.
Like a telephone pole.
Exactly. What you should have coming out of the ground orients from or origins from a flare out. So it should go from fat right up to, you know, the, what is it, DBH?
Yeah.
Right, the DBH or the diameter of the tree. DBH stands for...
Diameter of breast height, right, man.
Diameter of breast height. So, but it's simple. It's a simple thing. And you know what? The nursery man should show you how that's done. If you go in and you buy a tree, that nursery personnel should be able to show you exactly how deep that should be planted and what to look for.
Some apple tree companies, like I forget whether it's Adams County or Boyers, marks it now. They'll spray paint the depth.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
And I have a lot of experience with Boyers. They're out of Pennsylvania. Fantastic company. I advocate.
You turn me on to them. They're absolutely magnificent. But I would say, you know who's really good for potted ones? Is Manz's.
Manz is a great family company.
Yeah.
I respect them, and you get those guys. They're honest. I like Manz.
I like the pots for homeowner stuff because I can – I only want to plant a few trees. And sometimes with a bare root, if it comes when I'm not around or – you know what I mean? I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. A lot of these companies will ship bare root, meaning no soil – around the roots, and you'll get them. And if you don't take care of them right away, upon reception of them at your house, they'll dry out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't know. What do you think, John?
I've had some decent luck with just tractor supply trees, but
yeah, they're good. They can be good.
All right.
I haven't experienced Manz's yet.
As long as they're not dried out. Like I was at Tractor Supply and I saw some dried up plants they're selling, but then their apple trees, I actually bought one because I was like, that's a good tree.
Right. Listen, I'm sure you can find a good tree just about anywhere, but you're going to find a lot of bad ones in certain places. You need to buy – we're in the north. We're in the northeast. You need to buy northern-grown trees.
Yeah.
You can't go to a big box store that has a nursery section, look at a tree that's big, bushy, and beautiful in the summer, and expect that tree to grow well here if it was – southern grown.
Right.
And a lot of these Georgia trees nursery. Are grown in the south because they look beautiful at that time of year. But really, northern grown is everything.
The other thing is, a lot of them, some nurseries, not Manz's, is just a festering ground for diseases.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're just riddled. I'm like, I'm not going to buy this thing. I feel like, I don't even know if I can turn this around. You know what I mean?
Right. Absolutely.
I don't know.
There's things to look for. What I look for is trees that have been repotted and repotted and repotted season after season in an attempt to sell that tree. It didn't sell the first year, so they'll, you know, scuff up the soil, put it in a bigger pot, add a little more soil, and try to resell it. That can only go on for so long before you have root-bound trees that aren't going to do well and are going to require a lot of preparation at the roots.
I've learned that the hard way.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Unfortunately. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6, 7 p.m. Tonight's topic is arboriculture with arborist Charlie Bloom, and we'll play the last Hank Williams.
Like mighty oak trees, they line a shaded, well-worn path. They're the souls that have walked beside me, and I can see that looking back. Friends that stood by me right up to the last, like mighty old trees to help me walk this well-worn path down by the waters of a stream that never ends to shelter me from the noonday sun and guard me from the wind. I close my eyes and I can see them all once again, like mighty old trees down by that stream that never ends. Strong and always there when I needed them the most. You know they're rooted way down deep in my soul. I think about them all the time. Mighty old trees, they have stood the test of time, and they were always there to lean on when strength was hard to find. I just hope that one day you're lucky enough to find mighty old trees, mighty old trees like those rowdy friends of mine.
All right. If you're just tuning in, you're listening to From the Forest every Wednesday, 6 to 7 p.m. Talk about a different forest-related topic. And tonight's topic is arboriculture. With arborist Charlie Bloom. It's been over a year since we've had Charlie on.
Over a year. That's a long time not to invite me back. Well, I didn't break that much stuff, man. I didn't use that much profanity.
I guess we had to have you back.
Well, here I am. Hello.
Hello. Hello. Hello, does this work?
Is this on?
Hello. Yeah, so... Well, we only got about 2 minutes left, dude.
Okay, well,
is there anything you want to say?
Yes. We've talked about what the arborist can do for a client. And here's something that maybe the client can do for themselves.
Uh-oh.
In shopping for an arborist. Okay? Get an arborist who's insured. Get an arborist who comes to you maybe via, someone else who's used them, who recommends them.
Yeah.
A referral. Yeah. Maybe make sure you hire somebody local that you can talk to once in a while if you have a question about work to be done or work that he has done.
Yeah.
You know? So that's very important. I don't recommend... dealing with someone that you don't know, haven't heard of, not from the area that you're having the work done in. And that's a very important step in the right direction to get work done correctly and efficiently. We've dealt with many customers over the years, some great, some good, some not so good, as far as we were concerned. But... either way you look at it, we have to work as a team if we're going to get the job done right to take care of the trees. So it's very important to not only for us to build a relationship with a client, but it's very important for a client to get to know us and, yeah, and what we do and build a relationship with us.
So how do you want to be treated when you're on their property?
I want to be treated like they have confidence in why I'm there. I don't want to be hired by someone who doesn't trust that I know what I'm doing. Yeah. If you're not comfortable with somebody, there's plenty of guys out there. If you're not comfortable with a particular personality or maybe a demeanor, yeah, use someone else. It's okay.
Yeah.
But yeah, I want to be treated fairly, and I want them to respect me as I want to respect them. So, yeah.
That makes sense.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Sure it does.
And if you're just tuning in, you missed the show. The show tonight was Arboriculture with Charlie Bloom, and I just wanted to put a promotion out there. There will be a talk, if I can find it, at the Catskill Center called Food from the Forest at 7:30 p.m. this Saturday. I will be giving it. So I have to promote this. And if you want to know about edibles in the forest, I will be presenting about food from the forest. There's a lot of foods, you know, not just bark, Charlie.
Oh, so okay. Can I get a steak?
No.
Oh.
No. Well, yes. Yes, that's one of the edibles is white-tailed deer.
I mean, talking.
Bear fat. Engines, yes, as well as ginseng and ramps and everything else.
Okay, man.
All right. So that's all we have, and thanks for tuning in.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming, man.
Right. Turned to snow. His eyes were red, his hopes were dead, and the wine was running low. And the old man came home from the forest. His tears fell on the sidewalk as he stumbled in the street. A dozen faces stopped to stare, but no one stopped to speak. For his castle was a hallway, and the bottle was his friend. And the old man stumbled in from the forest. Up a dark and dingy staircase, the old man made his way. His ragged coat around him as upon his cot he lay. And he wondered how it happened that he'd ended up this way. Getting lost like a fool in the forest. And as he lay there sleeping, a vision did appear. Upon his mantle shining the face of one so dear, who'd loved him in the springtime of a long forgotten year, when the wildflowers did bloom in the forest. She touched his grizzled fingers and she called him by his name. And then he heard the joyful sound of children at their games. In an old house on a hillside in some forgotten town, where the river runs down from the forest.
WIOX is supported by Catskill Mountain Cleaning, specializing in Airbnbs, vacation homes, and private residences. Cleaning, firewood stack,